And this is our number
two. It's time for the fastest 15 minutes in the news. This is Dory's Fastest 15.
Oh, it's a world of news in a tidy little 15-minute package just for you. Welcome to our Fastest 15. And I made another strategic mistake last
Uh-oh.
Night.
What happened?
Well, I was doing show prep. I was up pretty late, and I was just looking forward. I was going to go to bed. My wife was already asleep, and I was going to watch last night's episode of Jeopardy, the greatest of all time. And I thought, okay, I got to avoid this website and that website, because those are where I might see who won.
Right.
And then I clicked on one of those websites because I thought there's one other thing I wanted to check for today's show. And there I saw the results.
Ah!
Very frustrating. Because it's not fun if you know who's going to win.
Yeah.
Because it was exciting down at the end. It was the Seattle guy, Ken Jennings, who was the greatest of all time.
Ken Jennings! You are the champion!
And Alex saluted him.
It has taken 15 years. For Ken Jennings to finally answer the question, is he as good as he appeared to be?
And he was. And so I really thought that James Holzhauer, because he was younger, because he had done all of his Jeopardy training in the last year or so, because he took pretty much a year off just to prepare to be a contestant. And I thought the freshness of all that prep, the fact that he's younger, even Ken Jennings said that the recall isn't as instantaneous.
Yeah, I get that. So do you feel happy for Ken, or were you kind of hoping the other guy?
I wanted Holzhauer.
You want him?
Oh. But that third guy, I don't even know what he was doing on the...
I don't even know his name, to be honest.
No, but they said that he had never lost to a human before, because he started, or when he was on Jeopardy, it was a day where you could only win five times max. So he won all five. Nobody beat him. And then he did a tournament of champions, and he won that. And then another one, he won that. And that's why he's won more money. He won a $2 million tournament of champions several years ago. And so then, as a gimmick a few years ago, they matched him, and I can't think of his name either now. But they matched him and Ken Jennings and this IBM computer, and the computer beat him. But that was the only time he had ever lost at Jeopardy, was to a computer. And now he just got trounced the last couple
of
days.
Was it Francois Barcombe?
No,
that's not it.
No, it doesn't matter. It's like the four tenors or the three tenors. The other
Brad
guy.
Rutter, Dory.
Brad Rutter.
Oh, there you go.
That's it. Brad Rutter. So, but yeah, he couldn't compete with those other two. So anyway, Ken Jennings, Seattle guy. And I read some interesting speculation, because it was especially obvious at the beginning of the show when Alex Trebek is walking out.
I heard his voice.
He's
too, yeah.
really having trouble yeah. walking. His voice. And he said once that there are real physical manifestations of the, you know, what is terminal cancer that he has, that he will step aside. And I was reading some speculation last night that Ken Jennings might be considered the next host.
Seriously?
Of Jeopardy. Yeah. Because the only other name I've ever heard mentioned was Anderson Cooper. And I don't know if he'd want to do it. But I'm telling you, there is no sweeter gig in all of showbiz than being a game show host.
Right.
You record a month's worth of shows in one day, and you make $10 million a year working one day a month. It's a wonderful gig.
Do you think I don't even know how they could do it. Yeah, you could, but I don't even know how they could do all of it in one day.
Well, you've, 20 episodes a month? That's 10 hours. Maybe they do it two days.
I think it's a week for a month's worth.
That could be.
But 4 days. I think it's a 4-day week, and it's a month's worth of show.
Yeah, maybe so. Maybe they do work a week to get a month's worth.
But $10 million
regardless,
for a week? Okay.
That's a good schedule.
Yeah.
It's a very sweet schedule. So I don't know. But Ken Jennings, I wonder if it would be difficult for him to get the gig, because, as you were talking about a couple days ago, Nicole, he really has branded himself as, very politically extreme. Right. And when you host a game show, you are, you know, you're supposed, you need to appeal to all of America.
For sure.
And that might be a problem for him. But that was the rumor after he won this thing last
year. I thought it was fun that James, did you see James's last answer, or one of his answers about the ghost, the greatest host of all time, and then pretended to write Pat Sajak and crossed it out. I thought that was very cute because it was sweet with a little humor and kept the mood light, but very sweet.
I think we need to get so Will Ferrell to host at least one episode
that
of Jeopardy.
That would be sweet. I would like that. He'd actually be good at it.
Oh, he'd be good. That'd be fun.
Yeah, with his character from SNL, just that whole spiel, whole thing.
Yeah, I like that idea. I don't know. So let's move on here. Today, the brand new inductees into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame were announced. And I can't believe that these guys weren't in yet. First concert I ever saw, New Year's Eve, 1976, going into 77, Seattle Center Coliseum. The Doobie Brothers made it in, and then also today, the Notorious B.I.G. made it in to the Rock Hall. Seattle's Dave Matthews was the leading fan vote getter, but he came up short for getting into the Rock Hall. Doobie Brothers, let's see who else. Nine Inch Nails, Depeche Mode.
Whitney
Houston. Oh, Whitney Houston. Oh, yeah.
She's in there.
Yeah, let's play a little Whitney here. And T-Rex. Was there a big song, Bang a Gong? Is that them?
That's them, yeah.
What else have they done?
Do they have any other songs?
They have a song called Jeepster, which is really great. Actually, their whole first, I think it's their first album, just called T-Rex. It's really fantastic.
But is that a Rock and Roll Hall of Fame?
Sure.
Catalog?
Why not? Eventually, everyone's going to be in the Hall of Fame anyway.
They haven't done enough. It took the Doobie Brothers till 2020. T-Rex should have to wait a while. Okay, speaking of music, they have announced that the next James Bond film, you know, it's always a big to-do, who does the sound, the big song for it. And it's going to be 18-year-old sensation Billie Eilish.
I actually think her sound is perfect for it. She's
Yeah, I do too. I like her stuff.
Kind of cool.
Yeah.
I went to her concert in Marymore last summer.
Did you?
Yes. I took my niece.
I remember you going to the concert. I had never heard of her back then.
I know. That's how quickly she got huge. I mean, that was June. Yeah, that was June.
Yeah.
She just turned 18 last month.
The thing I like about her is her songs, and the person who accompanies her on guitar is her brother Phineas, who's only 22, and he's a bit of a musical genius as well. And I always get the sense, I heard them both interviewed on Stern Show several weeks ago, it sounds like he's just an incredibly supportive but protective big brother.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
You need one.
But I still...
Some of her songs are a little dark, and I kind of worry about young, impressionable minds listening to her very dark.
Yeah,
song.
I would not want my kid in this life. Yeah. I don't know how.
She grew up very fast.
Some of them have a great message, and then some of them are about her like deepest, darkest thoughts, and they're real scary.
Very few come out on the other side with any sense of perspective at all. Oh, wait a second. We have yet another musical topic.
I love this one. Love, 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 love.
My good. You love this one?
And another one after that, if we get to it.
Oh, wait. No, not that one. No, number five.
Oh.
Do that one first.
Do that one first.
Wait, we have five musical
do that
stories.
You have to choose. Yes. Do that one.
Okay, on America's Got Talent last night, they had a guy. I'm going to get to that story since I'm skipping to this one. Okay. They had a guy from the Philippines. Mm-hmm. Name is Marcelito Pomoy. and he's 35 years old, and he came out, and he's got, when they were talking to him, he was kind of a deep voice, and then he started singing. Where is he? Where'd he go?
And he just, while you're looking for it, he had won the Philippines version of America's Got Talent.
Yeah.
But he was telling
his... That shouldn't be allowed, by the way.
Well, no, it's always allowed because America's Got Talent has got the biggest stage.
But if you've won, that's Philippines in, Got Talent,
it's a very, yeah, but
you should be disqualified. It's like you can't win Miss America two years in a
because
row
because he needs an opportunity to have a much bigger audience, a global audience.
It
should probably be phrased like that: world's
yes,
greatest talent, yes, or something.
Yeah, and his story is so incredible because
can people from the U.S. go over and win Philippines Got Talent?
Yes, but you don't want to go that direction. You want to go smaller and then go bigger. So other people, even Benicio Bryant won or did Germany's Got Talent and then came here.
Yeah, we shouldn't have any crossovers. And this is why we've got to build that wall.
Stop.
For America's Got Talent.
This is a beautiful story, though. This guy has just had such a horrible childhood.
Yeah, and so then he comes out and he has kind of a deep speaking voice, and then he starts singing.
When I was 7 years old, my mother, she left me, and my father was in jail. I was orphan. I live in the street. For many years, I tried to find my family. When I was scared.
Yeah, I'm going to say something else that's controversial. I'm tired of all the sob stories on all these talent shows.
But if they're true.
I don't know if they're true because every single person has some sob story that they're introduced with. And it's like to get votes, you have to tug at the heartstrings of the people who are watching.
It's true, though. They never go for anybody that has a good story. I mean, there's never been a...
Yeah, I had a happy childhood. My parents have been very supportive, and I'd like to sing for you. You don't ever hear that.
How about Carrie Underwood?
What was her story?
She had a great story.
I don't remember.
Oh, that was a different show. I mean, Idol.
Yeah, no, this show... Everybody has a sob. Everybody's introduced
this particular one.
With
okay.
a sob story, and it gets tedious because
you don't like sob stories.
No, because I don't even know to what extent they're all true.
Yeah.
Because
I
think everybody has to come up with something because they feel like that's a prereq to win.
I will sing.
Okay, so anyway, that's his story, a little bit of his story. But let's get to his singing now. So then. He tells his story, and then, waiting for it to load, then he started singing.
I pray you'll be all right.
That's his voice.
And watch us where we go.
So Celine Dion did the female voice. In a duet. And so he's doing this as Celine Dion, I guess.
In times when we don't know.
That's incredible.
And so he immediately jumps into the Bocelli, Andrea Bocelli voice.
He's going back and forth.
Yeah.
This is him.
You can do that.
Right. No.
Oh my God!
You could.
Not with a decent voice on each part.
This.
Not only this is incredible.
Let's hear it. No.
I can do this. And pick a song, Sean. Pick a song. What song you want to hear? I can do this.
All right, I want to hear Barry Manilow, "Mandy," as sung like that.
Oh, Mandy. Well, you came and you gave without taking, but I sent you away. See?
That's pretty good for where Dory's at in his singing
better
career.
Than this guy.
I think you proved the point that you can't do this.
I do think that part is better than the high notes.
Yeah. Anybody can do that. Okay, next up in the Fastest 15, for the second time, I'm really happy to announce this, for the second time in a week. Why was, Meatloaf was in the news a week ago.
Because he picked a fight with Greta.
Yeah, with climate activist Greta Thunberg went on Twitter and went after Meatloaf because Meatloaf, I just love saying his name, Meatloaf said that man's impact on climate change is exaggerated, and Greta Thunberg decided to respond to Meatloaf. Well, now, for the second time in a week, Meatloaf is back in the news. Where's my Meatloaf? Here we go. Meatloaf is suing a Dallas hotel and horror convention after a fall from a stage last year that he said left him seriously injured and unable to perform. He names the Hyatt Hotel chain and Texas Frightmare Weekend as defendants. Meatloaf argues that they profited off his fame but did not provide a safe environment at the event, and he fell off a stage during the event, got hurt, and now he's suing for undisclosed amounts of money. I forgot that he was in Rocky Horror Picture Show. You ever see Rocky Horror Picture Show?
Yes, but what is he in that movie? I don't...
Meatloaf. I don't know. I'd forgotten. I just read that in the news story here that he was in that. Okay, there you have it. That is your Fastest 15.
This has been the Fastest 15 Minutes in the News. Fast Stories, Fastest 15.
An all-musical Fastest 15. Okay, we're going to check the news for you, and then Brock Heward's going to drop by for his weekly visit. Hump Day with Humor. Heward, coming up next.
Close to how to free, baby.
It is Wednesday afternoon, and that means it is time for a weekly visit, Hump Day with Heward. Let me introduce one of the preeminent voices in all of college broadcasting, Brock Heward from Fox Sports. What an honor to have you.
Oh, thank you, Dory. I really do appreciate that.
Yeah,
that's the kind of introduction I'm looking for. Thank you. Makes me feel good.
I know it is. That's the way you told me to introduce you. didn't come from
I just,
me.
No, I said, you know, it's really nice when I go on some of these national shows, you
right.
know, that they introduce me with some, you know, something, you know, like in the U.S., well, like what? I'm saying, well, you know, maybe the guy this morning said, one of the leading voices in college football. Why don't you ever do that, Dory? And then sure enough, I should have known that was coming right back at me. So
right.
Good afternoon to you too.
Well, I do what you want.
Yes.
I you know why? I'm a pleaser.
You always have been.
Yeah.
That's how everyone in this building sure feels about you.
That's yes. The hallmark of my life.
Yes.
Okay, let's go with I've got a cough here.
Yeah,
so
what is
that? Put up with
is that the end of season?
No, you know what I think it is?
You just gut it out all season long, and then when the season finally comes to an end.
No, you really want to know what I think it is?
Sure.
I had some packaged food product under my desk, and some mice got into it.
Oh.
And so I started to feel like I was breathing some kind of dust. And then I was still breathing it when I was at home. So I pulled out these boxes, 25 years of my storied radio career in these boxes underneath my desk. And as I pull one box, a pile of, I don't know what it was, but it was ever these mice were carrying and this powder. And there's still, I think I need to get, so I got a vacuum. I'm on my hands and knees at work. Vacuuming and wiping down.
Are you sure it's not that hair from last week?
I'm pretty sure.
That had been in the mic?
Yeah, don't. That was so gross.
That bothered you for an entire
so gross.
Show.
That's it. Well, I really need some kind of industrial environmental, what are they called? So the cleans up
sure.
workplace?
Yeah.
I need an environmental specialist to come in
the hazmat
and clean
group.
This
yeah.
place up.
No doubt about it.
That's what I need.
Well, good that you're a team player.
That's why it's God, bro.
There you go. Great. Did you think they were going to get it done, Dory, as you sat there Sunday and you watched these Seahawks fight and fight and fight and clawed all the way back and made it a one-score game? Did you sit there and think Sunday afternoon, man, these guys are going to find a way to get it done?
It was very much like this regular season finale against the 49ers, where at halftime, they looked like they didn't even belong on the same field as their opponent. And then the fact, I want to ask you about this.
Yeah.
The fact that they do come back when they appear to be so completely physically outmatched. I heard an explanation that started to make sense because everybody asked me, why don't they just start the games the way they come out at halftime? And I think I have an explanation, but I want to hear yours first.
Well, I think there's two facets involved there. And number one is something they control, and then number two is reacting to the other team. What they control and what Russ from day one has known, has never had to learn. He came into this league knowing the value of the football. He doesn't put it in harm's way. Mm-hmm. He just doesn't. His governor, his risk governor is so strong that he will not, especially early in games. If it's not there, he'll take a sack, he'll throw it away, he'll live to play another day. You can't win the game in the first quarter. You can lose it. You can get so far behind, and he just won't do it. And even in that game, I think it was 7-3 at the end of the first quarter. So he protects the football. That's number one. Number two, I you know, Pete has a saying of learn the learners. That's in-house. Like, he needs to learn how his guys operate, how they work. He also, over the course of a first 15 minutes in a game, is trying to learn what the other team is doing. How are they attacking Russell? Russell's unique. Their system's unique. They're a run-first team. They're a run-heavy team as much as anybody in the league. They got lots of personnel groups. They like to run the ball. So how is that group trying to defend us? And then once they figure that out, then they start to make some of their adjustments and they game plan around it. I think those two factors over the years have come and play an awful lot with Pete and this team.
Here's my analogy. Okay.
You buying any of that?
Yeah. No, I think that's a good explanation. I think it fits well with mine. Rocky IV. So before the fight, Drago comes out. They go to hit gloves with Rocky. And Drago says, I will break you.
I will break you.
And Rocky says, go for it. And then... It, like the first half of the 49ers game, the first half of the Packers game, Ivan Drago is just pummeling Rocky.
Yes.
And knocking him down. He's taking standing eight counts, and nobody thinks there's any way he can get up.
Yep.
But there is something about the relentlessness of the Seahawks, like Rocky Balboa, where they figure out a way, and first they'll just start working the body. And, like, they're chopping down a tree. Mm. And then the gloves come down. And then you can deliver that knockout blow. That's what they are. The Seahawks are Rocky Balboa, Brock.
That's a good call. You remember in the late rounds of that fight in Siberia or Moscow?
It was in Moscow.
In Moscow on Christmas Day. Do you remember what Ivan Drago said to his trainer? It was in Russian, so it was only subtitle. But he said, he's like a piece of steel.
He's not human.
He's like a piece of steel. He's not human. Yes, that is what Russ and Pete and crew is. Now, that rope-a-dope philosophy, as you can imagine, drives a lot of people nuts.
Sure.
I mean, Seahawk Twitter and a lot of folks are just, they're going crazy about it. Like, this is your best player. And arguably, maybe the best player in all the NFL this last year.
Yeah.
That being Russell Wilson, you're just letting him take that kind of beating and sit in the corner, rope-a-dope style?
Right.
Why don't you come out more aggressive? Why don't you take more, right? I mean, that is, for the last couple years, has certainly been a ton of the narrative. And to a degree, I understand it. And I'll say this. They need to do some things defensively, because that's fine offensively to rope-a-dope.
Right.
That defensive mentality, that doesn't fly.
Well, Pete knows that.
Because
they got to make changes.
Because when they paired that early in their tenure in 12 and 13 and 14, and Pete can say this feels like 2012, right, in after the game. Well, that group defensively, Dory, they would come out of their corner and they would come swinging and knock people out.
Yeah.
So they do have to remedy some things on that side of the ball.
Okay. One other thing. Tony Romo.
Don't get me started on this.
Tony Romo.
Don't.
Rumors are that ESPN is going to offer him as a color football analyst. Now, you are the preeminent college football analyst in America.
No, that would be Kirk Herbstreit 1, Todd Blackledge 2, Joel Klatt 3. I'd be in the conversation for a certificate of participation.
Okay.
Okay, let's be honest.
No, yes. We'll trophy top 5.
Okay.
You might get an actual trophy. But you're up there. So explain to me how Tony Romo is worth $10 to $14 million to ESPN.
Well, I, as you can see, I pulled out my phone while you were talking.
Yes.
That was not to avoid your question or to act distracted.
It's very rude.
Yeah, well, it was my agent who I reached out to the other day, and I just sent him that headline, ESPN getting ready to throw $10 million per year at Tony Romo. I just texted that to him, and he said, indeed. I've actually heard it could be $15 million.
Is Tony Romo, he's not twice as good as you. So you should be making between $5 million and $7 million.
Let me try to do them. Is he 65 times better? I think my math might be right there. I don't know.
Wait, if he makes what, 15? I got to figure out how much you make. I need to know.
Sorry.
I'll figure it out.
Yeah. Anyhow, I texted back. I said, man, what a crazy subjective world we live in. He stands out in the NFL. This is me talking to my agent, because his crew, in my mind, is the only one in the NFL that truly spins the story ahead. He will predict of what's coming ahead. He's a predictive.
But he's awfully good.
He absolutely
is. Awfully good.
But I said there's a half dozen guys in college football that are absolutely just as good. Kirk Herbstreit and Todd, those guys I reference, they spin the story ahead. He stands out because he's the only one.
What is the number one college guy at ESPN?
I think Herbie makes seven figures, but he works his butt off. He does game day. He works, I mean, Tony does one game a week.
Low seven figures?
Yes, yes.
Really?
Yeah, yep.
He doesn't make $2
million? I'm sure with all of his other, like, his base salary, if Romo's base salary is going to be $15
million, yeah.
I bet you Kirk's is around $1 million base. Now he makes a ton of other stuff, incentives, sure, and endorsements and everything else.
Sure.
Yeah, 10 to 15 times more than Herbie makes. And so here's my agent's response. You'll like this. He said it also speaks to how neither CBS or ESPN have a viable backup option. He has more leverage than anyone in the history of this business. That's
everything.
Leverage
in negotiations.
Yes,
leverage is everything. I remember meeting you at a little
breakfast. I heard
that from
a wide man one time, years and years and years and years ago.
One of our first breakfast meetings.
Good.
I told you,
that place.
Leverage is everything.
Leverage is king. Leverage is king, and he's got it.
Okay,
pretty amazing.
What am I doing, a dinky little radio talk show for? If there's millions, tens of
15
millions,
15 million
dangling out there, crying out loud. All right, Brock, you were really good today.
I tried.
You're not just the preeminent college football sports analyst in America. You are the preeminent Dory Monson Show guest.
Well, we will let your audience decide that. They'll text appropriately.
Yeah, they got Wyman. You got Wyman. You got Pete Carroll. You got Michael Bumpus.
Yep.
Okay. And now the key question: are you coming over Sunday?
We're working on it. My dad turned 70. Coach Heward turned 70 in a couple weeks.
It's never the same without you.
Yeah. Well. Is Paul coming?
No. But we got Bumpus, Jordan Babineau, Ray Roberts, Dave Wyman, Navs Ajobi.
Yeah.
We need the big guy.
All right, I'll do
it. We need another post player.
Yeah, you going to be able to play? You going to put the weight? What do you call your big brace?
Unloader. Yeah, loader brace.
You going to put the double unloaders on?
You want to hear something sad? That will be. That's why you got to be there, Brock. That's going to be
your final game.
My last competitive basketball game of my life.
Yeah.
Something that's been so important to me.
Okay.
So come on.
That versus my dad's 70. Okay.
I'll
let you know.
Okay. Swing by both.
All right.
Brock Heward. We got lots more straight ahead. It's the Dory Monson Show.
Rolls on.
Rolls on.
One of the things I did not have time to talk with Brock about: the best linebacker in the NFL, a guy named Bobby Wagner. Well, Bobby's right up there. But the same draft class, Carolina took a guy named Luke Kuechly. And you could make an argument that Luke Kuechly is the best linebacker too. But, you know, Bobby and Luke Kuechly, they're kind of 1 and 1A. Same age, same draft class. Luke Kuechly, yesterday, in a very emotional press conference, he actually just released this on social media. Just 28 years old, still at the top of his game, but he's had several severe concussions. And there was one that was really, you know, widespread attention. It was a Thursday night game in 2017.
and he got a concussion, and he was on the field, and they had to bring the cart out. And this big, tough guy, he was sobbing. And he was sobbing because I think the disorientation from the concussion, but also he knew that he was going to have to leave that particular game. But he also had suffered several concussions before. And I think that's when he started to realize that he might have to make a decision here. This game that he loves so much, and he makes a fortune playing, or his mental health with all these concussions. And so he made the announcement. It was really sad, touching.
It makes me sad because I love playing this game. I've played it since I was a little kid, and it's my favorite thing in the world to do. And some of the best times of playing this game are behind the scenes in the locker rooms, in these meeting rooms, on the buses, traveling the games. You can't replicate that anywhere else, and that's why this is so hard to do, to move on in a different direction. But in my heart, I know it's the right thing to do, and it's hard, but that's why you play this game to form relationships, and if you form strong relationships, they never go away. It's hard, but I hope to, you know, still be involved in some way. And
I'll ask you, as you're listening to this, I'm really curious. I never had sons. God blessed my wife and me with three daughters. But do you have problems letting your kids play football? You know, and I talk with my friends Michael Bumpus and Ray Roberts and Dave Wyman and Paul Moyer about this all the time, about if knowing what we know now about CTE, do they have problems with their kids playing? And every one of them says, no, what they got out of the game was much more than the risk they assumed. But, man, it's sad to hear this.
For me, now is the right opportunity to move in a different direction. And, you know, there's only one way to play this game since I was a little kid is to play fast and play physical and play strong. And at this point, I don't know if I'm able to do that anymore. And that's the part that is the most difficult is.
Send me a text. Let me know if that's affecting you as parents of boys, your decision-making. 98973, that's 98973. Big Lead at 2 is next.